Shini Rajkumar with you, and we've got quite a 2 o'clock hour for you. Let's get started. Patriot Games meets the Fourth Protocol. That is how the book from my next guest is being described. Just came out on Friday, and these former naval officers, one of them a commander, are in studio with me now. Let me introduce them to you. David Bruns went to the U.S. Naval Academy, and then he served on a submarine for the Navy. And J.R. Olson served in the Navy in intelligence for nearly 25 years. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. In your book, Weapons of Mass Deception, WMD, kind of a takeoff of the weapons of mass destruction we heard about in 2003 that Saddam Hussein had. So kind of give us some of this backstory, guys.
Well, sure. So if you remember back to the first Gulf War, the Iraqi Air Force, about 125, 130 planes, whatever was remaining towards the end of that air campaign, the Iraqi Air Force basically flew to Iran, and the Iranians never gave those aircraft back at the end of the first Gulf War. I don't know how many people remember that.
Probably not a lot of people remember that, JR.
So the premise behind this was that in the run-up to the Iraq invasion in 2003, the thought was that Saddam Hussein probably had nuclear or at least weapons of mass destruction of some kind. There was some indications that could be chemical, could be nuclear. We weren't really sure. So our premise here was that maybe he really did have some and that he smuggled them into Iran, and that's how the book starts.
And your character then, David, is Brendan McHugh. Tell us about Brendan.
So Brendan is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. He entered the U.S. Navy SEALs. He's actually from Minnesota.
What a coincidence.
And yes, and J.R. and I are both longtime residents here, so we wanted to incorporate hometown landmarks and hometown events, both current events as well as future events, because the book actually ends out in 2016. We wanted to incorporate those into the story. During the course of it, he has some interactions with an Iranian splinter group, which has these nuclear weapons. And as the story develops, he becomes more and more integral to finding and solving this nuclear terrorism, which could happen.
All right. So, JR, it sounds like you were pulling from the headlines, from real life, as well as your own experiences.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about when we first sat down to discuss, you know, writing this book was that we wanted to weave as much of real historical events into this book to give it as much realism as possible. And we also wanted to be as technically accurate as we could. So between Dave's career in submarine service and my career in the intelligence community, we tried to put our heads together and figure out, okay, what could actually happen in real life?
And did you ever sort of, as you were writing this, did it ever kind of freak you out? Because you were, I mean, as I was even reading some of the press materials for this, I had to keep reminding myself, this is a fiction book.
Yeah, yeah. So we certainly ran into a few instances, because one of the central mini arcs in there is the Iranian nuclear negotiations. So as that developed over time, because we started working on this book about a year ago, as that developed over time, we actually went back and adjusted things to make it historically accurate, and then we projected forward from that.
All right. So what was one of the things, because this came out, from what I understand, you have an interesting history how you two even met and decided to do this book. That's sort of a cool story.
Yeah. So I retired from the Navy in March of 2011. And my wife and I eventually decided to settle back here. I'm originally from here. I went to Washburn High School in Minneapolis. And I started going to the All-Service Academy breakfasts that are held on the first and second Friday of every month. So you have Air Force Academy grads, West Point grads, Annapolis grads. And that's where I met David. And over time, we got to know each other, became friends. And we were asked to attend the Naval Academy Parents Association meeting in, I guess it was April of last year?
Yeah, April of last year, right? About a year ago.
Yeah, almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah. So we went through our respective career paths in the Navy and after we got out of the Navy. And, you know, David mentioned that he was a writer now. And one of the parents popped up and said, you two should get together and write a book. The rest is history.
Yeah.
Wow. And you turned it around really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we started brainstorming on it. I asked JR out to lunch maybe a week later and pitched the idea to him, and he was sort of waiting for me to ask him. So we started working on the book and working out plot lines in about the June time frame, and started writing sample chapters in July because, you know, we had never co-written something of this magnitude together. So trying to figure out how you're going to do that is actually an art form.
Yeah, especially when you have two voices and two computer keyboards going. I'm talking with David Bruns and J.R. Olson. They are co-authors of Weapons of Mass Deception, both are naval vets. And J.R. is a retired U.S. Navy commander and has had quite a bit of experience in naval intelligence. David, working more recently as an author himself. So what was it about this project, David, that really kind of called out to you?
I'd written a couple of science fiction novels and had some modest success with those, but I really wanted to sort of try a different genre. And when JR and I are both giving our bios at this Naval Academy Parents Club meeting, I had known JR for actually about 2 years at that point, but we had never actually gone through his bio in any sort of detail. We sort of had Navy shorthand for it. And I listened to the whole thing, and I thought, wow, this guy's really done a lot of cool stuff. I bet you he would be a great resource to write a book. And then when this parent popped up with this idea, we just said, you know, I think we just have to do this.
Kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
JR, as you were going through this project with David and putting the words together and sharing the stories and sharing real things that happened, you know, we're coming up on Memorial Day and we're looking back and thanking our veterans and honoring people who are continuing to serve. Did you ever sort of feel like you walked a fine line? Did you ever feel like, whoa, I shouldn't say this or shouldn't share this?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
In fact, what I wanted to make sure with the book was that we pushed it to the very edge of what I thought we could say without going over the line.
Over the edge.
Because, you know, there are still active duty people out there doing very dangerous things every day. And we absolutely didn't want to do anything that would put any of those troops in harm's way.
Exactly. I'm talking with David Bruns and J.R. Olson. If you want to jump in, if you have a question for them, if you want to share, or if you want to even call out your own honoring of a military veteran, I would love to welcome your call or text. Our text line, 81807. Our phone lines, 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. So we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to have you share your thoughts with us as we are just over a week away from Memorial Day. So this book is out now. It came out Friday, so thanks for coming in. Is this one of your first interviews
with the book? Yes, as a matter of fact, it's our first radio interview.
Absolutely great. Well, thanks for debuting here on WCCO Radio with me. I love it. What is it that you hope people get from this? Because this does still ring, you know, like a lot of reality is happening mm-hmm. in this book.
So first and foremost, we set out to write a good story. It's intended to be a piece of fiction. But when we actually talked a fair bit early on about what we wanted to get out of the process, we wanted to pick a topic which was historically significant. And certainly weapons of mass deception, I think, is something that's imprinted on the American psyche as, you know, the main reason why we went into Iraq and then they weren't there. Secondly, we wanted it to be historically accurate. So we wanted to use real events and then leverage off those real events. So we deliberately interlaid real events with fictional events, and we have had people say to us, you know, did that really happen? And that part didn't, but this part did. And lastly, we really wanted to be authentic. I mean, both of us have been in the military. We know how military people think, how they speak, how they act, and we really wanted to get that across. Probably one of the kindest things any of our reviewers has said to me is that it read like early Clancy. And one of my favorite books is A Hunt for Red October. So to have a compliment like that coming unsolicited from somebody I don't even know, I just, you know, got a little fanboy on that one.
Priceless, right? Priceless. JR?
Yeah, so one of the things that we both can't stand, and we've talked about this a few times, is when, you know, you're watching a movie or a TV show or reading something in a book and you find that the technical accuracy of the military portrayal is so completely off. And that's one of the things that we worked very hard to make sure we didn't make a mistake with that.
All right.
One of the things I'd like to add real quick is the characters that we developed in here. You know, a lot of times you have this sort of Hollywoodized version of the hero and the bad guys. And what we tried to do, I think, in this book is really weave a set of both protagonists and antagonists that were human, very human. And you could almost find yourself, in some regards, rooting a little bit for the bad guy and looking at some of the good guys and saying, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Speaking of Hollywood, when we come back from break, I'll ask these men who they would want to play the characters should Weapons of Mass Deception get picked up by Hollywood. You can join the conversation 8781-807 by text or 651-989-9226. Rashini Rajkumar with you, and we are kind of doing our own interesting reflection on Memorial Day as we get ready to honor our nation's servicemen and women. And in studio with me right now are two people who I am thanking for their service. They are formerly of the Navy. J.R. Olson is a retired U.S. Navy commander, and David Bruns spent 6 years as a commissioned officer in the nuclear-powered submarine force chasing the Russians before leaving the Navy for corporate life in the mid-90s. And their book is Weapons of Mass Deception. And before we went to break, I was asking them, if this does become a movie, who would play that lead character? David, you got that one?
Well, when we set out to form all these characters, we actually did went through and looked at a ton of different faces online. Not necessarily name actors, but different people who we could hold in mind. So we didn't necessarily have a particular name actor in mind. Colin Farrell would probably be the closest Brendan McHugh type, sort of a dark Irish type. But we actually one of the things we did during this process was we decided we were going to run a weekly blog post, and one of those posts is meeting the bad guys and meeting the good guys and putting those pictures up and explaining how we came to select them.
All right, really interesting. So probably not Colin Farrell, but kind of that's the visual.
Yeah, so, sort of a black, dark-haired Irish, sort of a wiry, tough-as-nails kind of character.
Right. There are some younger actors kind of coming up
that
might be able to find someone. So I also understand there's a strong female character in this book. So this book could appeal to the ladies out there, huh, guys?
Absolutely. There's a strong female character. Her name is Liz Sarouz. She's of Iranian descent. So she also speaks Farsi. As we were talking on the break, we went through a pretty extensive beta reading process. We had 12 different beta readers to read a draft of the manuscript, including some active duty military, including an FBI agent. And one of the feedbacks we got from that beta reading process was that female character needed to come out more. So we did a pretty extensive rewrite, about a month of rewriting and adding in a lot of material on Liz Sarouz. She was not a side character, but she was not really a main character when we started. But
you needed her fleshed out and more believable.
Absolutely.
JR, what was that process like? I mean, kind of trying to get into the brain of a woman.
Well,
good luck with that.
Yeah, it was kind of hard, actually. I guess the challenge was, you know, David and I, we come from a background where, you know, showing a lot of emotion and whatnot is probably not really the thing to do, especially out there in the service.
Not a lot of warm fuzzies in those submarines.
Not, you know, or anywhere in the Navy, quite frankly. I mean, it's all about get the mission accomplished, right? And so we had to think hard about how should this work. And quite frankly, I think David talked to his wife, Christine, and I talked to my wife, Melissa, and we compared notes. And I think what we drafted was a much stronger character at the end.
All right. So there is – and the fact is there's still a lot of the combat people are still more men, right, than women.
It's a growing
– But it's growing.
Yeah. A growing percentage of female military personnel out there.
As we look ahead to Memorial Day in about 8 days, what would you like us to know as retired naval officers? What would you like us to know? You know, maybe misconceptions you can help break about the military right now, because it's had some really rough press lately.
Yeah.
Especially the Navy.
Yeah, so I guess I can take that to really start with. I mean, we're living in an age now where less than 1% of our population is in the armed forces. And I think I saw something from Gallup that like 1 in 3 people actually know somebody who's in the military. And I think as you skew younger on that demographic, that becomes more of a divide. When these people are going out and, you know, putting their lives on the line so people can run businesses and live a safe life, I don't think it's enough to just clap for the troops when they go through an airport or something. I think you need to do more about that. And you know, you can hire a veteran.
Which is big because veterans are so well trained. I mean, people in the military are so methodical and team players, it seems anyway.
Yeah, I would tell you that in my experience in my Navy career, I was so impressed with the young sailors that I had the opportunity to lead and take care of out there in the fleet. They're just extraordinary individuals. And, you know, you hear all this talk about PTSD and whatnot. Well, that's certainly an issue. It is clearly an issue. But that doesn't mean people are getting ready to go off the deep end at a drop of a hat, right? I mean, the things that people have seen out there in the combat zone is a tough thing to deal with. But it's no different than somebody experiencing a traumatic event here back in America, right?
JR, do you think PTSD gets overblown, or do you think we finally have the services to deal with it?
I think at this point we're starting to get there where we understand that it is a real thing. It is something that, you know, we need to give the support to those young kids who've had those experiences so that they can adjust when they come back here to civilian life. But, you know, sometimes it is, I think, a little bit misconstrued by the media as to what it really means. I think if you talk to most military people out there, they say, yeah, I had a tough experience here or there, but I don't feel any different. I may have some challenges sometimes to deal with it, but, you know, we can't do too little. I don't think we can do too much either, quite frankly. But, you know, I think there's a nice balance there that we could do for our veterans.
Right. You're both talking about hiring vets, and there's a big push for that right now. I'm working with a client, and frankly, most of my executive clients are 40s, 50s, 60s, and this one's in his early 30s. He's so impressive, and he is former military.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense that his bosses have decided, you know what, he's the future of the company, and they put him in a very, very high-profile role. What is your advice to employers out there when it comes to hiring these vets?
Yeah, so first off, I would look past maybe the military jargon on the resume. I would look past the persistent use of sir and ma'am, and I would put the resume on the top, and I would bring them in. Because I think what military personnel have that maybe their civilian counterparts don't have is number one, a sense of mission. When they're given a job to do, they go and do it. They don't say, well, I don't have enough resources. They go and they get it
done. They don't make excuses.
Right. Yep. And secondly, they're adaptable. Military people are put into situations constantly where they have to learn a new skill. So if we tend to write job descriptions, and I was a hiring manager for 20 years, we tend to write job descriptions very narrowly. They have to have 5 years with SAP experience. Well, maybe this individual has a different kind of ERP experience. I would be absolutely willing to bet that if you put them in your SAP system, they can learn it hands down.
And remind people what SAP is.
That's an enterprise resource planning system which companies use, guide their manufacturing systems.
Got it. Okay, so when people are thinking about vets and you know, there have been movies lately, you know, that have really called a little thing, American Sniper, really called to mind and put this in the forefront for people. What are some misconceptions that maybe could help turn people around and maybe we'd have more people willing to serve, JR?
Well, you know, again, I think we go back to this discussion we had a little while ago about we didn't want to do anything that turned the book into Hollywood, right? We want to be realistic. And I think what you find out there in the military services, regardless of which service you're talking about, is a deep commitment on the part of those young men and women who volunteered to serve the country. And I think if we keep that in mind as a nation, that there are people out there willing to, you know, stand that post, right? They are amazing young men and women from all different walks of life here in the United States. And I was so proud to have the opportunity to serve with them during the 25 years I was in the Navy. I'm sure Dave had the same experiences on board the submarines.
Yeah, so I mean, so every day within the military, you get ordinary people put into extraordinary circumstances, and they rise to the occasion. And I think that on Memorial Day, we should do more than clap. We should do something that's really going to make their lives different, and that's a job. You know, we have homeless vets in this country. That's just a terrible thing, right? So look for ways that we can make a meaningful difference.
Right, and bring everybody into that fabric of the community as well. Just an honor speaking with you both. Thank you for your service. David Bruns, J.R. Olson, they are the former naval officers. Weapons of Mass Deception is their book just out. And David, people can find that at Amazon?
They can find that at Amazon. If they put in the search engine Weapons of Mass Deception, it should pop up right at the top.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in. Happy Memorial Day weekend early to both of you. And when we come back, I'm going to open up the phone lines. You've probably heard about Snapchat and Periscope and all these things that are really quick, unique videos that then disappear. Some are saying this is the future and Facebook is out the door. Out the door. I'm going to open up the phone lines. I want to find out. I want you to help me understand this. 651-989-9226 or 81807 when we come back.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Yeah, so there's social media. You've heard of Snapchat, right? It's the real quick little videos or pictures you take and then they're gone. Well, guess what? Snapchat, Periscope, and Meerkat are really the wave of the now and the future. And if you're stuck in Facebook land, you could be left in the dust. Why does this matter, you ask? Because some people are just completely staying away from social media. Well, it does, because it is helping you connect with communities. Maybe it's helping you connect with your kids. Lots of different things. There is a good argument for this kind of social media. I want to hear from you. Are you using any of these types of social media? Give us a call, 651-989-9226, 866-989-9226, or text me, 81807. Have you managed, or are you someone out there who's managed to stay completely away and off of social media over this last decade? I would love to hear that and how you've managed, and I'm sure you still have a very happy life, but I'd love to hear about that reality too. So let me give you a little bit of the 411 that I've been learning about these kind of new techniques. So Periscope and Meerkat both launched in March. So those are very, very new. You can do things like live video from your smartphone. They compare it to sort of video chatting on Skype, but you're using those different tools. So they say, I've been reading this article in the Wall Street Journal, if Twitter gave everyone a megaphone, these apps give you a camera crew. So the key to these new platforms, we'll call them, Periscope and Meerkat, is that you put little snippets, they assemble little snippets of what you've been doing throughout the day into a short little montage maybe of your day. So in the case of Snapchat, let's say you use Snapchat. You do that, you post it, you put it up there, but then it disappears. It expires. Your Snapchat story expires after 24 hours. Really kind of interesting. I don't know if that's something that is appealing to you. I mean, part of me says the privacy piece on this is where, I don't know. I mean, do people really want to hear and see, not hear, but to see everything I'm doing or little snippets of what I'm doing over a 24-hour period? Kim's got a take on this. Kim is calling from Maplewood. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I love Snapchat, and I'm of the older generation. It really keeps me in touch with my nieces, who are the younger generation.
So describe what you're even doing with it, what you're posting, what you're shooting, and then this whole disappearing function.
It's actually really dumb things, like where I'm at, or if I'm walking with the dog, or if I, last night I did it of our just music from the pond because there was frogs and crickets everywhere. And they kind of do the same thing. They tell me, they do rollerblading pictures and what they're doing at school. And it's really fun, actually.
All right. So you said you kind of connect with your niece on this. So does mm-hmm. she send you these Snapchat stories back?
Right. Yep. And then another thing on Snapchat that's really fun is you can find out things on a video. Well, it's video and pictures together from all over the world. They had some stuff from L.A. They had some stuff from oh gosh, Brazil last week, and you just hold it down, and it'll play all these snippets on what's happening all over the world. It's kind of interesting.
So, Kim, is anyone able to see your Snapchat story, or just people in your circles, kind of like, you know, on Facebook, there are Facebook friends or Twitter followers?
Yeah. If you put it in what's called a Snapchat story, other people can. But otherwise, I just do it with my friends.
And you just kind of send, is it a text or is it just they're on that account so they see it?
Nope, they're just on that account, on the Snapchat account.
Okay. So you recommend this. You're saying to the rest of us out there who are a little nervous about trying this or just kind of feel like, who cares what, you know, sending this video, what do people really want to see about my day? You think it's a great thing.
And it's so fun and a little bit addicting.
Yeah. I bet. So is it time consuming?
It can be if you want it to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I don't think Facebook's going to go away. I think Facebook, and I'm on a group on a St. Paul Facebook chat, and it's really interesting to see what's happening in the different communities, and somebody may have a problem, and then they ask other people, what do you think they should do? And so Snapchat's too quick to do anything like that, so I don't see Facebook going away anytime soon.
Because that's what's interesting to me about the Snapchat, is it just disappears. I mean, it just goes away. Like, you can't retrieve it.
I think there's a way you can, but I haven't figured that out yet.
Okay. So that's the next step for Kim, right? Figure out that maybe your niece can help you with that, Kim.
I'll have to ask her.
Right. Thank you so much for calling. It really, it gives me a little, you know, confidence that maybe I could actually do this too.
Oh, you definitely should try it.
All right. Thank you so much, Kim. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
We're talking about Snapchat and Meerkat and Periscope. Are you using them? Could you see yourself doing what Kim was doing, taking these little snippets of her day and turning it into a short little video, maybe a minute long, sometimes a little longer, and sending it or putting it into your Snapchat story stream for others to see? Let me know, 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. You can also text 81807. I also am wondering, have you said goodbye to Facebook? Because we're hearing that people pretty much, I don't know, under 25 are absolutely not even bothering with Facebook anymore, and they are doing other things, whether it's, you know, Instagram or Snapchat or other new things that are coming up. And the biggest group, the highest number of people that are joining Facebook are actually in that 55 and older set, which is kind of interesting. Chris, are you still on Facebook? I mean, is it still valid in your life?
Yeah, I still use it.
And what kinds of things are you doing with it?
Oh, everything. I mean, I communicate with my family, put, pictures of my kids, like, you know, that kind of stuff. It's more personal.
Okay, you know? More personal. All right, so that's good to hear. And Chris is kind of right in that borderline. He's kind of in that group that definitely was in Facebook, and Snapchat is more of kind of a new thing, and Periscope more of a new thing. Well, taking your calls and texts, 81807 is the text line. 651-989-9226 is one of the phone lines. Brandon is calling from St. Paul. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I just wanted to give my 2 cents worth on this issue. And as far as Snapchat and a lot of these other anonymous social networking sites, one thing you haven't mentioned are all the families that are devastated from the teenage suicide that has increased within the last 2 years due to these websites and these apps.
You know, Brandon, that is a really great point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not always fun and games. Some real serious things can happen. Do you have someone in your life or kids that are touched by this, kind of the negative side of this, Brandon?
Yeah, Izzy Dix, Rataya Parsons, just to name a few.
And these are people that are in your world who either have been bullied or something negative has happened because of some of these social media.
These are teens that were attacked via these very same apps.
Wow.
Ask.fm, Snapchat, where they had Snapchat stolen that they thought were supposed to disappear, where it turns out they actually, they're stored on a local server, and they are actually able to retain them.
Brandon, thank you so much for sharing that. And this is the whole world of social is so, it's still evolving. And there are some attorneys out there who specifically focus on social media and what happens to it when, you know, either you've passed away or where does that live on? And I will be doing some segments in the future to handle this. And we'll get into Brendan's very serious point on this in a future show, because it is very, very it's a powerful tool. All of these different social media outlets are very powerful, and they put a lot of power in different people's hands, and they really do require parental guidance if this is a teenager or a young person, and just common sense from all of us. We have some texts coming in. I sometimes hate these new things like Snapchat, too easy for bullying or other horrible things to happen. Thank you, Dave, for sharing that. Absolutely. And it sounds like you're in agreement with Brandon. This other listener finds Facebook completely invasive and narcissistic. This person never joined, but they love Snapchat. Use it daily. Connect with family and friends without the time consumption. Okay, well, that is interesting to hear about that. So some very real life outcomes, right? Sometimes good, sometimes bad. I guess that's the case with almost anything in life. Periscope and Meerkat kind of give people the opportunity to be citizen journalists. And we saw some of that potential when Periscope became evident during the recent Baltimore riots. It was offering multiple windows on the event as it unfolded. So all this information I'm getting from the Wall Street Journal, a really, really interesting cover story in their off-duty section of the weekend edition. So I highly recommend it. Also saw some stuff in the Star Tribune today in today's issue about social media and this growing of some of these alternate formats that are out there. So just curious to hear what you want to say about that. I did bump into someone on Friday night who had lost her husband. This is a couple years ago. And she said that she wanted to make sure it was a horrible accident, a horrible tragedy, wanted to make sure she was the one who told her daughters. And I said, well, why would you ever be worried about that? Because they were away at college. And she said, well, because of Facebook. If one person tells one person, and then that ends up getting posted. And I just wish there was some sort of protocol when it came to announcements like that. I mean, I would never think of putting news that I heard someone had passed away on Facebook or Twitter. I mean, certainly we see people sharing messages and condolences once it is announced on Facebook or once it's announced publicly in other media outlets, but I can't even imagine this whole doing that and someone finding out in that way. Very, very sad. All right, we're winding down news and views for today. I've got some interesting gopher news for you, a little heads up on something that's happening in the fall. We'll take a quick break and then we will come back with that. Rashini Rajkumar with you. We are winding down news and views for this May 17th. A little programming note. We have no show next Sunday, May 24th. Because we have a Fisher House special for Memorial Day honoring veterans. So tune into that. I will not be with you next Sunday, but I will be back on the 31st. And we have quite a show prepared for you that day. And in the works, lots of fabulous guests, including a legislative roundup for the 2 o'clock hour on May 31st. We will talk with some of our own local Minnesota legislators, and we'll find out how they think this session went. And as you know, it wraps up tomorrow. What got done, what didn't get done, what's ahead. We'll break down all of that on May 31st with our senators who will be coming into studio. On May 28th, the Autism Society of Minnesota, in partnership with the Mille Lacs Energy Cooperative and Northern Pines Mental Health, will offer 2 free training sessions for safety professionals and 1 free training session for families, caregivers, and community members who support individuals with autism. This is one of the very few free trainings offered in the Brainerd area for professionals and the general public. The Centers for Disease Control notes that autism has a diagnosis rate of 1 in 68, which makes autism the fastest growing developmental disability. So really proposing lots of different opportunities as well as challenges for people in emergency preparedness, in medicine, in different things like that. So I wanted you to know about that coming up on May 28th. And you can check that out with the Mille Lacs Energy Cooperative as well as the Minnesota Autism Society. And you can find out more there. Condolences to the family of Bob Gildersleeve. You may have heard the Ecolab executive was one of the people who died in the Amtrak derailment in the Philadelphia area on Tuesday. He was 45 years old. He lived in Maryland with his family, but he officed in St. Paul. And members of the Ecolab family put out their statements earlier this week, but I wanted to send our good thoughts to them and to Bob Gildersleeve's family as well as the family that is Ecolab. Some interesting news for bikers. Guess what? Riding bikes to work has increased. It's on the rise nationwide. And I know a lot of people were celebrating National Bike Week or National Bike Day this past week. 62%, that's the number, growth in bicycle commuting from the years 2000 to 2013. That means there were more than 882,000 people who commuted by bike. And Davis, California has the highest percentage of residents biking to work. 25% of workers there are getting to work by bike. I think that is pretty amazing and also kind of hard to believe. I can't imagine giving up the car. Maybe some of you can, but that would be kind of hard for me to imagine. This week, David Letterman, a CBS icon, he's a comedy icon, really, says goodbye. His final three shows, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Chris Elston, do you care? Are you sad that he's leaving? Are you a Letterman fan?
I don't get, just because of my schedule, I just don't get a chance to watch it a lot. I mean, I realize he's iconic, but I'm just not that familiar with the show.
Not as familiar with the show. All right. Well, some people are, and I had a chance to watch it a couple nights this past week, and one of the nights that I was watching, George Clooney was on, and it was kind of fun to see their interaction, and George Clooney brought handcuffs with him, and he kind of right away, without David looking, handcuffed him and said, you can't go anywhere. You can't leave. So that was kind of his funny little tribute. And he shared some really touching words about what David Letterman has really meant to him as well as to the country. And those of us who are fans of David Letterman, I'm sad to see him go. But I think what's really nice about his departure is that he is making the choice to leave. He gave us that heads up last year. We know Stephen Colbert is going to come in and replace him. I think he starts in September. But this week, we've got 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to see him live. Otherwise, you know, the beauty of technology these days, you can catch things on demand or you can record them or whatnot. So you could probably keep on watching David Letterman as long as you want. But tonight, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are the actual last nights. And I'm kind of wondering, I'm curious who he's going to have on the last shows. I have some guesses, and it'll be interesting to see. I am going to try to watch Wednesday night's show. I know that we could watch it on demand, but there's just something about watching it live and being part of that all happening and knowing it when it's happening. So I do hope to watch it on Wednesday, and I hope you will too. It's, of course, on CBS. The University of Minnesota just announced the 2015 Homecoming Grand Marshal. Homecoming 2015 is September 20th through the 26th. So a bit of an early announcement, which is kind of fun. And that person is Archie Givens. He is currently a University of Minnesota Foundation trustee, but in the past he has served on the University of Minnesota Alumni Association and has done a lot of other things of service to the university community. And he and his wife run a foundation, the Archie Givens Senior Collection of African American Literature. It's a resource for students at the university, and they currently are working in their own foundation, giving back. That's part of what he does. So he is the Gopher Grand Marshal for September 2015's homecoming festivities. Well, thanks for spending part of your Sunday with me here, Shani Rajkumar, on WCCO Radio. We have a special Fisher special next Sunday, so no news and views, but I will be back on May 31st. We've got quite a big show planned for you. Have a great week.